Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm Praz from the FPL Wire.
Oh, Praz, game week 33 started with a hat-trick for Anthony Gordon and it ended with a hat-trick for Cole Palmer. But there were some real disappointments in there too, weren't there? We had blanks for the likes of Salah, for Darwin, for Son. Foden missed out altogether. It was an interesting week for FPL managers. How was it for you?
Oh, I mean, it's one of those things where when you're asked to come on this podcast and you're hoping for a good week and you've actually had a terrible week. You know, everyone who you've noted down are the people I didn't have and everyone who blanked I did have. So look, oh. I mean, I think I scored 63 points. My team looked really good going into the week. So I'm really surprised. But look, Newcastle and Chelsea were the two teams that I was light on. And obviously they had really big wins and we'll talk about them. So I ended up with Palmer's 26 points, who everyone owns. Haaland captain, that was the one thing I got right. And then Solanke, but that's really it. And you did really well this week.
I did. Did I spy Eze sitting on your bench as well?
Yes, obviously preparation for game week 34. I was never going to start him, but
But still.
If I had Foden, he would have come on. But, you know, unfortunately, Saka, Son, Darwin, Salah all showed up, did nothing.
Yeah, I mean, my game week was better, but it was a week of like either big hauls or absolutely nothing in my team. So I had 83 in total, which was good. Obviously, the double Chelsea clean sheet sticking last night. And I must admit, though, Praz, when I was watching that Chelsea game, I was like, how long, what minute is my clean sheet going to go? Because it felt like it might, just because I don't trust that Chelsea defence to keep a clean sheet. So even though Everton were playing particularly badly, more on that later, I still was constantly worried right up until the ref blew the final whistle. But yeah, so Petrovic and Gusto doing well for me. I had Gordon against Spurs. So of course, I was kind of mixed emotions for me on Saturday lunchtime. Palmer, he was my vice-captain. If I'm honest, though, I never really thought about captaining him. I was always going to go for Haaland, I think. It was between him and Salah for me.
Kudos for vice-captaining him. I wasn't even close to that. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I thought he was a nice differential captain. I just thought that Haaland and Salah had really nice fixtures and an opportunity where they could try and get some daylight between them and their opposition in the hunt for the Premier League title. And I kind of like to back people that have got something to fight for at this point of the season. So I looked at Palmer. I liked the fixture. I just wasn't sure what kind of Chelsea might turn up. So I went without him. But just so many disappointments. The ones you mentioned, Son, Saka, Salah, Darwin, Saliba and Gabriel. I was just like, wow, guys, come on. Is anyone going to pop up with something?
I mean, it's one of those weeks where obviously, aside from FPL, huge results in the Premier League for the top three. And obviously, we are loaded up on those players and we expected home wins. And how often do Arsenal and Liverpool lose at home? And so it was one of those things where, you know, ironically, we talk about chip strategies and everything else in FPL. A lot of people who are free hitting next week, who are actually then well set with a lot of Newcastle and Chelsea players, did well this week. And a lot of people who are not free hitting were actually, you know, dead ending or working towards game week 34. And they had a lot of Arsenal, a lot of Liverpool and didn't do well. And I think that shows in our scores as well, where you had those Newcastle and Chelsea players and I didn't.
Yeah, and I guess it's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see what people do next week, because I don't have my free hit chip. I'm planning to play through next week. But and one of my big concerns was the single game weekers, and I've currently got three. I will only have two by the time that the game week actually starts. But those two are Haaland and Palmer. And after this weekend, I kind of want to play both of them next week, even with Palmer having a difficult fixture against Arsenal. I kind of feel like, well, with the form that he's in, there are goals there for him. Yep. And there'll be some big decisions for those that are free hitting to decide what they do about assets like Haaland, like Palmer. Do you have them in a free hit team? Do you not? Do you go all in on the doubles? It could be quite a big week for us next week. But of course, before that, we've got European action to come. So be calm, I think, with the transfers. But let's start with Liverpool, shall we? Because I just did not see this result coming, if I'm honest. After the result against Atalanta in midweek, I thought Liverpool would bounce back in this one and put in a good performance at home.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you would think that, you know, given the fact that they also rested players, Salah didn't play midweek, that they were prioritizing the league by far. And yeah. So at home to Palace, you would expect, and they had a lot of chances. Let's be clear. I mean, it wasn't as poor a performance as the result reflects. They had a lot of chances. Jones missed that great chance. Darwin had that great chance. Jota, when he came on, missed a great chance. So I think they were unlucky. But at the end of the day, we pay big bucks for Salah and Darwin's. And Salah in particular looked pretty poor, and it's been the case now. I don't want to revisit the two-year-old debate of Salah after AFCON looks a little bit tired. I mean, he didn't play all the games in AFCON, but he looked peripheral again.
Yeah, he did. And it was interesting, wasn't it? Because, you know, I've got Salah and I've got Darwin in my team, and I was looking at this match thinking, well, Palace defensively have actually been good this season. They've been a defence that we've probably not talked about enough, if we're really honest, in FPL. And over the course of the season, I've had Anderson for a bit and I've had Gehi for a bit, but probably haven't paid enough attention to just how good Crystal Palace have been defensively. Now, you are right. Their goal led a charmed life at the weekend, and Liverpool could have and should have had multiple goals. In reality, the reflection is that they should have probably won that game comfortably, but this is football, right?
Yeah.
And this is FPL. Sometimes you have FPL assets that just don't do particularly well that week. And there will be a lot of managers now that are going to free hit next week that are looking at Salah thinking, well, I think everyone's going to have Salah, whether you're free hitting, whether you're using your transfers, however it is you're playing it. But Darwin is going to be a bit more of a conversation for managers that are free hitting now, because obviously there's Luis Diaz there as well. You've got Jota coming back, and we saw him in this one. There are opportunities for Klopp to use some slightly different players. And of course, the second leg away in Atalanta before these two double game week fixtures. How are you invested in Liverpool right now? Or is it quite light?
Well, I'm similar. So I have got Salah and Darwin. But like you, I'm not as confident in Darwin because Atlanta is the away leg. Both the double game weeks are away games. So you're also talking travel in addition to these games coming thick and fast. So I do think that, you know, a lot of these guys, Darwin's, Jota's, even Diaz, I think they start one of the two. But if you're on a free hit, you have a decision to make. If you're not, then you just stick with who you have, right? I mean, if Darwin gets 110 minutes, it's not the end of the world. Similar for Diaz. And I think that would be my play. I think the interesting bit here is that we're talking a second attacker looks difficult if you're on free hit. So apart from Salah, who do you go for? Whose minutes you can predict? I think in part, the Atlanta game will determine that. So let's say Jota starts and gets 45 or 60 minutes. Then you're thinking, okay, he's coming back from injury. They need him. So maybe he could be a punt that you could go for. And then obviously the defense hasn't been great. After Boxing Day, I think Forest is the only clean sheet that they've kept, even though they've played Luton at home, Burnley at home, Sheffield United at home. They've conceded in all of them. But you got to have a third Liverpool. And you know, Trent has come back and played the second half after Bradley went off. But then Van Dijk is right there. Who would you think would be the defender of choice if you were to go there?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because like you say, a lot of managers will have Bradley, who went off injured in that game. And obviously now we've seen Trent come back in and play for the majority, actually, of that game after Bradley went off. And then obviously we see Alisson come back. So if you've got Kelleher in goal, you've now got a problem there that you've got to deal with. Robbo, I think for me, is the one that if I was going to go for a Liverpool defender, that's where I would look. I think he was really good in this game. And was it not for that goal line clearance, Liverpool could have found themselves 2-0 down.
Right.
I was really impressed with him. I thought that he was by far the standout of that Liverpool defence. But the problem is I just don't really trust the Liverpool defence to keep a clean sheet, like you say, just the one since Boxing Day. And, you know, the two fixtures that they have in the league, away at Fulham. Well, Fulham are scoring plenty of goals and they have been good so far this season. And then Everton. Now, look, Everton were particularly poor on Monday evening and we'll talk a bit more about them later. But it's a derby and Merseyside derbies in midweek. Anything can happen in a game like that. So I don't know. I'm kind of doubled up on Liverpool and probably just going to stick with the double up because I'm not sure. One, I'm going to find it difficult to find the budget for Robertson. I think if you're free hitting, then you just take a choice between Trent and Robbo and you use your budget wisely, depending upon how you want to spend the rest of your team. But if you're making transfers, it's going to be hard to find the budget for a Robbo or a Trent. And equally, after this double, do you really want to keep them? Because the fixtures are a bit mixed towards the back end of the season. And of course, they don't double again. So there is a conversation, I think, to be had about about whether it's even worth trebling up on Liverpool.
Fair enough. I think there's three categories of teams at the moment. There's ones in your boat, which basically have to navigate 34 and don't have a chip coming out of it. So I'm assuming you don't have a wild card. So you have to be a little bit more logical in terms of Liverpool. And I completely understand if you just go for the two, because there's other teams that you want to target after this game week 34. I think there's teams that are on free hit. Obviously, that's a different conversation. And there's teams like me who are going to wildcard out of game week 34. So for me, I'm dead ending. So I will probably go for a third Liverpool. And there, I think for me, the temptation is still Trent. I mean, Trent looked so rusty. I mean, he was spraying the passes all over. Basically, the radar was off. But that's understandable. And I guess the question is, what do I need to see versus Atlanta for me to go for a Trent over a Robbo or a Van Dijk? I think I need to see a start and another 60 minutes. If I get that, then I could be a little bit more bullish. Although the logic says that Robbo is the upside. I mean, he created four key passes, like you mentioned. And I think that would be the alternative. And Van Dijk is never bad as well. I had him for the earlier double in game week 25, got me a goal. He's great, but you still need the clean sheets with Van Dijk. You can't just rely on that bullet header in every double game week.
No, and I think that's it, isn't it? And I think, you know, there are other doubling teams that have actually performed really well this weekend, like Palace, for example, who you kind of look at and go, would I be better off, rather than scrimping and saving and trying to find budget, you know, to afford these Liverpool expensive assets who may or may not keep a clean sheet across this double, would I be better instead to maybe look at Crystal Palace or look at Wolves or one of those other teams that have the potential for some clean sheets across the game week? And Palace are a team that at the moment I am not invested in at all. I don't have anybody at the moment in my team. I did look at it on Wildcard a few weeks back and was like, I actually don't know where to go here, because do I get an Anderson? Do I get a Mitchell? Do I look at the attack? And at that point, there were some injuries. So it was like, well, Eze, but yes, I want to have Gordon for the next couple of weeks. So maybe I can do a bit of hokey-cokeying around with Eze and Gordon later. But for me, it's Mateta, who's really shown himself as a good option ahead of this double game week. I've got Muniz at the moment in that position, who obviously doesn't double in game week 34. I'm looking for a cheap replacement for him. And Mateta was top for XG underachievers in game week 33. So a really nice, cheap option, I think, in a Crystal Palace team that are starting to get players back from injury. Of course, we saw Elise in this one as well. So how are you thinking about investing in Palace ahead of the double? What did you make of them?
I think on paper, the fixtures for the double, Palace have the best ones. Home to West Ham, home to Newcastle. And we know Newcastle are not the best travellers, especially defensively. Yeah. So I think on paper, they're the best two fixtures. And like you said, Olise coming back, the team is shaping up really nicely. I mean, the Liverpool win can only do good things for them in their confidence for the double. So I think it's a team that most free hitters will triple up on. And it sounds strange when already Arsenal and Liverpool are also doubling. But I think, you know, you would also look to triple up on a Crystal Palace. And so I feel, you know, for me, Mateta is a great option. I think Eze is the best out of all of them. If you can get there, you know, he's got penalties. He's as attacking as Mateta. He's got now, it's his third attacking return in the six matches he's played since coming back from injury. And he just works with Olise a lot better. So for me, Eze would be number one. Pens is a factor. Mateta would be a close second, because as for all the things you mentioned, I mean, he looks very critical to their attack. You know, he was competing with Edward for a bit, but for the last few games, he's been the one who's got the nod. So I feel like he'll play both games. And then Olise is also a very exciting attacking punt, because if you can predict his minutes, he played about 68 minutes in this game. If he can get, you know, 70 odd minutes in the two games, also on set pieces, great for XA. I think those are the three picks in attack. Then you come to defense. I mean, you mentioned the names. I also wanted to add Munoz there, because both Munoz and Mitchell are the wing backs who are pushing well ahead. I mean, you looked at how Mitchell got the assist this game, but Munoz is equally attacking. So I think these are the guys who people will sort of target for the double.
Yeah, and I think you do have plenty of options at Palace, don't you? I'm looking at my team thinking, well, obviously Salah and Saka are going nowhere because they're going to double and they're the standout captaincy picks, I think, for game week 34. I've then got Palmer and Gordon, who I can't sell and don't want to sell either, because both of them, for me and my strategy without a wild card coming out of game week 34, both of them are going to be absolutely essential, in my view, between game week 35 and game week 38. So they are locks. The only other midfield slot I have has currently got Son in it.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult sell because obviously coming out of 34, Son doubles in 35 and then doubles again in 37. So yes, I can find a spot for Eze by selling Son and then using a transfer next week to bring Son back in. But by the time I've taken a hit, because undoubtedly there's going to be a hit involved in doing that at some point, whether it's for 34 or for 35, it doesn't feel worth it. So Mateta is a much, much easier get for me. He feels like, and I think there'll be a lot of managers that are in this spot that are looking at their team and thinking, where is my weakest position? How do I fill that one with a Crystal Palace asset? That's how I feel at the moment. And so for me, Mateta is easier. I'd love Eze. Eze's going to be the one I think I feel like was the one that got away just because I didn't have that extra spot to give him. But should we segue into the Newcastle and Spurs match? Because one, I want to get it out of the way. And two, talking about selling Son kind of feels like it might be a nice opportunity to discuss what happened in this one.
Yeah.
And maybe we start with Spurs because no shots at all for Son in this one. He was definitely off it, as we saw then him get taken off ahead of the 60-minute mark, which, you know, he's the Spurs captain. That never happens. We never see him getting withdrawn that early. It was such a disappointing performance from Spurs. And I looked at this as an opportunity, given that Son returned 17 points in the reverse of this fixture back at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I just didn't see this one coming. I thought there would be goals for both sides. I thought Newcastle had the potential to score four against Spurs because that Spurs defence hasn't been great. I think we've had one clean sheet since game week 17. So it's been really struggling for clean sheets. But in front of goal, they've been good, but they really weren't in this one.
I mean, there was a really nice article in The Athletic and they talked about the fact that Eddie Howe basically worked out a game plan for Spurs, which was the same blueprint that Wolves used a few weeks before as well. And it's basically you sit back, you give them the ball, you let them attack, and then you put pacey wingers on the left and the right, and you attack those wings because Udogie and Porro are so attacking that there's spaces to attack behind them. So it's a little bit of a worry for Spurs if teams are figuring out a way to get behind them. You know, Brendan Johnson has been very good. I think Son has been good, obviously. And then once you add Richarlison as well, I think those three should do better because I feel like Werner is getting a lot of the chances and we've been here before. He is quite wasteful. And if you put Son getting at the end of those same chances that Johnson is actually, you know, crossing in, I think that would improve the productivity. So I feel like it's still a team that we need to, you know, we've seen 33 weeks of data and said that this is an attacking side and they've got two doubles coming up. So I see no world in which people wouldn't go for a Son from next week. So if someone's in your case and they're thinking, shall I sell Son? You definitely need to then think about getting him back. So the logic then is it worth a hit? I don't think it's worth a hit to sell him.
No, I agree with you. I'm going to hold Son and just pop him to my bench this week. It's why I'm not bench boosting in game week 34, because I think that for me, I can sell Son this week without taking a hit, but I know that I want to bring him back for game week 35 and have him for the rest of the run-in. So one, I can't use the budget. I can't spread the budget around the rest of the team because I'd need to keep it there ready for him in game week 35. And two, I would then have to take a hit to do the other transfers that I want to do ahead of game week 35 in all likelihood. So for me, he's a hold. Pedro Porro, I think, is probably the one that's most of interest because obviously goes off with a hamstring injury. At the end of the game, Postecoglou was talking about how he felt something before in the first half and they sort of sent him back out after halftime to test it. Obviously, his hamstring didn't make it through much of the second half. So I think if I was a Pedro Porro owner, I'd feel differently than I would as a Son owner because one, he's an injury doubt. Now, of course, there's a long time before Spurs play again because they have the blank in game week 34.
Correct.
So, you know, there is plenty of rest time and opportunity for him to come back. But coming out of game week 34 and through the next few weeks, do we really see Spurs clean sheets? We've got Arsenal and Chelsea in the double in 35. Now, we know that Arsenal score plenty of goals and we saw on Monday evening how many goals Chelsea can score against weaker defences. After that, it's the Liverpool game that's always an interesting game going up to Anfield. There's a nice fixture in the middle there with Burnley. Then it's Manchester City. And then the final day of the season against Sheffield United. And who knows what might be needed on the final day of the season. So I'm looking at that thinking, at best, I see two clean sheets in those final matches of the season. Pedro Porro's got one goal this season. He has had so much attacking threat. The underlying stats are ridiculous for him in terms of attacking potential. One goal. And that came last week. So for me, I sold Udogie ahead of this week. I'd be selling Pedro Porro as well ahead of this week if it meant I could strengthen my team. Because, what, yes, may have the double if fully fit for game week 35. But how many points do we realistically expect that Spurs defence to get in that double game week?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think Spurs are going to be very trickier coming out of this week. So, and to add to that, you know, they go straight for after a blank into a double. And so we won't know, you know, we obviously will hear from the press conference, but we won't get a game to see if Richarlison is back, if Porro is completely back, because, you know, Porro did have an injury before as well. Yeah. So it's a little bit of an uncertain team. And I think for the moment in 34, you know, for the purposes of this pod, we can just say, look, yeah, you need to just simply think about who you want to retain for the run-in. But the real problem will be 35 and there'll be a double. There'll be a temptation to go for two or three Spurs. I'll be on a wild card. I'll probably have three Spurs because, you know, you have to attack the double. I don't know who then. You know, it's a problem for me in game week 35. So I'll leave it for then.
Let's talk about Newcastle then, because again, this is a team that doesn't double in game week 34. But my goodness, they were impressive against Spurs. And they are a team that are struggling defensively in terms of having defenders available. But Fabian Schär, again, with another attacking return for him and a clean sheet, another big haul for him. What really intrigued me, as a Lascelles owner, I've still got Lascelles sitting in my third bench stop because I've had other things. There's been other things to deal with. And he hasn't been a priority sell up until this point. He's becoming closer to being a priority sell as the closer I get to using my bench boost chip. But seeing Tino Livramento come off the bench and be back fit and available for Newcastle again made me feel a little bit happier about life, because I was really struggling actually with where I go with that spot, because obviously the sales was perfect, because at 3.9 it was like, you are the perfect pick, you're so cheap, you're gonna have your double later, everything's gonna work. I look around the four bracket and I'm like, particularly with Jarrod Branthwaite going off injured in the Everton game. And I'm as a Pickford owner already, I don't really want to be doubling up on the Everton defence. Maybe Tino Livramento might just offer me an opportunity. Now, it's not something I'm going to do for this week. I'm probably going to wait, watch Newcastle in this one, because I don't need to make that move now. But ahead of game week 35, 36, 37, I'm going to have to make that change. And if Livramento is getting the starts, maybe he's a good option. He's not going to get you the attacking returns that Fabian Schär seems to be getting on a regular at the moment. But maybe he's an opportunity for us to go for a cheap Newcastle defender again.
Yeah, I think as a team, they've now got two clean sheets in a row. Now, I'm not going to say their defensive problems are over, because I think they are not looking the same solid defensive outfit that we're used to from last season and early part of this season. But I think, again, another team with great fixtures. They've got good game week 35 fixture, 36, and the double in 37. So I think it's a team that people will target. So in defense, it's going to be trickier. I mean, I would obviously love Trippier to be fit and get him if I have the funds. But then Schär and Burn and Livramento probably are the four that they will go with on a regular basis. Eddie Howe doesn't change the defense unless there's injuries a lot. Mm. So I do see the Livramento, Trippier, fullback, and the Burn and Schär centre-back pairing. And so therefore, I think those are all solid picks. And I do think people will have to invest in them given how good the fixtures are after this week. But I think it's the attack which is the most appealing.
100%.
And I feel, you know, with Isak now getting a run of games and being injury-free, that attack just looks really good. Harvey Barnes is back, so you get the pace on both sides, because Almiron wasn't doing it in the early part of this season, even later. So I think Barnes and Gordon at the two ends of the two wings are really doing well. And then Isak is just so good. His hold-up play is really good. He is very accurate in his shooting. So his productivity is so much higher compared to somebody like a Darwin or a Jackson. You know, he'll get fewer chances, but more FPL points. So you know, I think both Gordon, Isak, good picks for the run-in after this week, possibly.
It was one of those where I looked at him sitting there with a home game against my team in the lunchtime kickoff and thought, there's no way I'm not playing you. And there's just no way, because his home form is unbelievable. And all right, away from home isn't quite the same, but it still doesn't make him a bad option away from home either, by the way. So if you've got him for this week and, you know, you don't have a team of doublers, all right, it's an away fixture, but I don't think that would stop me wanting to play Anthony Gordon this weekend. But yeah, as an Anthony Gordon only Newcastle owner at the moment, apart from obviously Lascelles, I am looking at Isak, and my plan for a while now has been to move Darwin straight after the double for Liverpool. And Isak is putting his hand up and going, I should be definitely the one that you get, because, like you say, fixtures are great, form is great, fitness seems to be staying, no signs of Callum Wilson either, which is also helpful when you're trying to invest. Because if you remember at the back end of last season, there was a lot of, do I go for Wilson? Do I go for Isak? And Wilson had that massive haul when Isak didn't. And that, for a lot of managers, was kind of a very big turning point in their seasons. It definitely was for me. That's why my season finished as well as it did. But Isak, I think, is the standout second forward as soon as this double game week is played. And I think it's a shame almost, because I didn't go for him earlier on the basis that I felt I needed to have Darwin in place ready for the double, which is the same reason, Praz, why I sold Ollie Watkins, who I just... Ollie Watkins, I remember sitting on the main pod with Kel and Jules and saying, I really don't like the idea of selling Ollie Watkins. I don't like it. I won't be able to afford to bring him back because I've got all this money invested in him. He's been so good and so consistent this season. And then he had that little hamstring injury that kept him out of the game. And that made it a little bit easier. It made it a little bit easier to go, okay, Ollie, thanks for your loyalty and your service this season. I really appreciate you. But now I'm going to go for Darwin instead. And now every time I watch Ollie Watkins play, I think, why on earth have I sold you? Because, again, I was so impressed. 19 goals so far this season and no penalties. Like, that is a really, really impressive stat.
Yeah. Look, I think it's one of those things where sometimes we're guilty of over-management, and we look at the fixtures and we say, look, they've got City away, they've got Arsenal away, they've got no doubles. It's a team that you can offload and get another guy who's got good fixtures and a double, which Darwin did have and Isak does have. So in Isak's case, if you move from Watkins to an Isak, that worked out really well. If you move from a Watkins to a Darwin, that has not worked out very well. So it's just one of those things that, you know, I think will you do it again? I probably think, you know, or I can say for myself, I will probably do it again because fixtures bring points.
I know.
But For somebody like a Watkins, he's just had an incredible season. Who would have predicted this 2-0 win against Arsenal?
Not me.
But they didn't have a sniff in the first half. I mean, yes, they hit the post once. In the second half, it was just a completely different performance. They completely, you know, I was surprised to look at how much they ran the game and how much control they had. Arsenal literally did not have many chances in the second half at all. And, you know, Villa could have had another that shot that Tielemans had that hit the crossbar and then the post. I mean, they were close many times.
They were.
Watkins deserved it.
Yeah, and as somebody that went for the double Arsenal defence this week and bought in Gabriel, I didn't really see this one coming. Arsenal have been so good defensively over the course of this season. And for them to concede two goals at home, I just never expected that to happen. And you're right. The first half, I thought, the Arsenal were the better side. Obviously, there was a couple of opportunities in there for Aston Villa, but they didn't really take them. Second half, Aston Villa were dominant. They were really, really impressive. And as you say, could have and maybe should have scored more goals than they did. It was slightly interesting for me, this one, in terms of Havertz and Saka, because there was a lot of conversation going into game week 33 about whether you could save a bit of budget by selling Saka and having Havertz instead. And there were a lot of managers that were kind of looking at doing that. Now, obviously, neither of them returns in this one. Havertz's position was a little bit different, though, in this game. Yep. And that, if I was a Havertz owner, would worry me a bit, because where he's been playing in the previous weeks is why he has had the level of attacking returns that he has had. In this one, he wasn't as effective. And we're going to have to see what's happening with Odegaard Of course, thankfully for us as FPL managers, we've got the Champions League fixture in midweek. Yeah. So we will get some more understanding about Ødegaard, because if he's out as well, it does affect my thinking. I mean, I'm trebled up on Arsenal. I'm not changing it. I'm going to have them for the double in the way that I have them set up right now. But it is a bit of a worry if they're without Ødegaard.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's he is the creative engine. And look, I think, let's assume he's okay, because Arteta said it's a minor injury.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a leg issue or whatever, and he took him off early. But I think the biggest question is, for people on free hit or want to get a third Arsenal, is should I get Havertz? And that was a really interesting thing you posed, which is basically in this game, he was playing as an eight,
yeah,
especially out of possession. But I still think when they did have possession, he was quite far out. I mean, he in terms of further forward. Because Jesus is, you know, he was, you know, veering towards the left a little bit more. And I felt that, you know, with Trossard also coming in a little, between him and Havertz, they were the two attacking guys that the crosses, that they were trying to find with the crosses. Trossard had a great chance. Havertz had a couple of chances. So I do think if you look at the last six games, Havertz has had four more big chances than Saka. Now, it does depend on the opponent. Like you said, some games Havertz is up top, some games he's number eight. But I do think he's worth a punt. So if somebody's looking at a free hit, maybe going for a Havertz and a Saka instead of a double defense, I think it could make sense.
Yeah, it's a question that I wasn't really sure how to invest, how to double up in Arsenal. I had Saka and I had Saliba and I've had them all season, and I knew that I needed a third. And I was kind of looking at my team and thinking, I don't really know whether I want the double up here in defence or the double up here in the attack. And so when I wildcarded, I made the decision to just go with two and wait it out. And over the last few weeks, the not having the double defence has killed me. It's just been week upon week upon week of clean sheets sticking, and week upon week upon week of me only having Saliba, and therefore getting a red arrow on the back of Arsenal's results. Havertz has had an impact on my rank, but it's not been massive, because he's not very highly owned. And so as a differential, he's great. So I guess it depends on your risk and reward strategy here, because the sensible, I'm going to try and protect myself a little bit, FPL managers like myself, maybe go, the double up in defence makes sense, because particularly if I go for Gabriel, because his attacking threat is so much greater than the rest of the Arsenal defence. So maybe there's more upside anyway if the clean sheet goes. The brave FPL managers maybe look at that Arsenal team and go, okay, but I'm only going to cover myself if an Arsenal clean sheet sticks. Whereas if they go big in terms of, you know, goals scored and Havertz is involved, the potential green arrow is so much greater. So I'm happy to be doubled up defensively. Even after this performance, I still don't think that, you know, Arsenal's defence have been by far the best defence in the league this season. There's not even a question over that in my mind. But Havertz might feel like, depending upon the position that he plays in, he may feel like the one that I wish I had from Arsenal, but couldn't get because I was already tripled up. I mean, maybe you get him in challenge. Maybe that's the way that you do it. And you know, you have him there instead, because you can obviously have five rather than three. But yeah, I think I'm not panicking about Arsenal, I think is what I'm saying after this performance.
Yeah, but I think that's sensible, and you hit the nail on the head. I think Havertz is the upside pick, but it comes with risks. I mean, people who are not on free hit will probably all be on double Arsenal defense, and that's absolutely fine. I'm not worried about somebody owning a Havertz over my Saliba or a Gabriel, because this is, from an underlying data perspective, is the best defense in the league over 33 games. That's a lot of sample size. So it's a team which you can easily back over a double game week for a clean sheet in the two games, and I think that's fine. And if Havertz gets a goal or a return or a couple of returns, then you're fine. I mean, you're basically going against somebody who's basically handpicking their team for a free hit. So I feel like it's fine, but I do think if I was on a free hit, I would look for that upside ceiling with the Havertz if he gets that brace in one of those games, because he does have that in him, especially if Jesus isn't playing.
Well, let's talk about the other team in the title race then, and Manchester City, because I don't think anybody was surprised to see them beat Luton at home on Saturday afternoon. I don't think anyone was surprised to see it be 5-1, actually. Even the clean sheet going didn't really surprise me, because that happens with Manchester City. It seems to have happened all season. But what surprised me, actually, and if you'd have said to me before the game, Sam, Man City are going to score 5 goals today, but Haaland's only going to get a goal and an assist, I'd have been really disappointed. And I still felt disappointed watching, because even the assist, it's a lucky assist in reality, because it is such a wayward shot that it just happens.
It was going off target.
Yeah, and it just happens to get deflected into the goal. So I kind of feel a bit lucky with Erling Haaland that he got the assist and the goal. But equally, I can't help but feel really disappointed. As a Haaland captainer, I was kind of like, 5 goals, just the 1 goal and the assist for Haaland. I don't know. I think he's one of those with a single game week up next. I'm going to play him because it's a fixture against Brighton. But he doesn't feel quite on it in the same way that he was in the earlier part of the season. So if you wanted to build a free hit team that didn't have Erling Haaland in it, I don't think I'd hate that, you know?
Yeah, I can understand it. And I think there's a couple of things with him. There's obviously the Real Madrid tie, right? So there was always going to be managed minutes. Now, they ended up playing 80 minutes, both him and De Bruyne. Mm. So I do get what you're saying, but they did score the 2 goals after they went off. So, you know, the Doku and the Guardiola goals. Yeah. So I feel, yeah, I mean, could he have done more? Yes, he did get a goal and an assist. So it was okay. But I know our expectations from Haaland are much higher than what he gave, especially at home to Luton. And he scored 5 goals in the cup. There was away, but it was against Luton. So I get the expectations bit. But I think, look, if you're not on a free hit, then playing Haaland is absolutely fine. Because the competitors or the other options that are doubling as strikers this week are not too many. I mean, you've got Mateta, as we talked about. We've got Cunha. We've got Solanke. These are the guys we'll talk about in a bit. That's really it. So for me, these guys are probably slightly better than Haaland because they play twice. But they're not so much better that if you're not on a free hit, that you take a hit, you sell Haaland or you sell another striker and you bench Haaland instead. I just think you play Haaland. So I think the Brighton away fixture is good enough that if you had to play Haaland, it's fine. But it's also good enough that you on a free hit, if you wanted to go against Haaland, you can.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. And I think that kind of goes for all Man City assets, doesn't it? Like if you've got Foden in your team, obviously didn't feature this week. If you've got De Bruyne in your team, obviously he did get the 80 minutes. Then it's kind of up to you what you want to do with those midfielders. You can, if you want to, sell them and use that space to have a doubling asset that some of the guys that we've been talking about already. But also, if you wanted to hold them, then that's not a terrible thing because the fixture is quite nice. Plus, they will have that double coming up in game week 37. So I think you just have to think really carefully about your strategy when it comes to the single game week players, because we regularly see single game week players outscoring their double game week counterparts, particularly when they come from in-form good sides like Manchester City, who are in a title race. So,
correct.
You know, I just think we need to be careful. And that probably leads us on quite nicely to the man that is kind of the most informed man in football right now, it feels like, and surely has to get a start for England in the summer at the Euros, in Cole Palmer, because my goodness, Prad, where would Chelsea be if it wasn't for Cole Palmer this season? He only got his first start in game week 7, yet here he is, the most goals scored in the league this season with 20. Like,
incredible.
It's just unbelievable, isn't it? To see him pick up a hat trick and then get another, it was just really impressive. 10 double digit hauls since game week 7, 3 more than anyone else.
He's just an incredible pick. To think that I got him on a game week 10 wildcard for 4.9 million.
I know.
And this guy is basically winning the golden boot race. It's incredible. I mean, I can't remember a pick that has had such a big influence for that price for a very long time. And we've had players like Sterling and Kane in the past that have delivered, but this guy is just unreal. And his impact on FPL, his impact on Chelsea, it's just incredible. And it was a perfect hat trick as well. A header, left foot and right foot.
So, perfect one. And then a penalty.
Yeah, exactly. So he can do everything. And the only sad thing is everybody owns him. So it's only if you get, I think in game week 35, he'd probably be more captain than Son, but that's a discussion for another week. But yeah, I think superb that he's in the league, superb that he's English. He'll probably make the squad for England in the Euros. So very, very excited.
No, oh, never mind, mate. The squad. I want him to start for England in the summer. Like I feel like having him and Phil Foden in the same team for England could be so much fun over the course of the summer. But yeah, 26 points for Cole Palmer this week. That is the most that a player has got in a game week so far this season. 4 goals, 3 bonus points. Just so impressive. The next best, by the way, was Ollie Watkins back in game week 7 against Brighton, where he got 3 goals, 2 assists and all 3 bonus points.
Right.
30 attacking returns in 24 appearances. I don't know if I can sing Cole Palmer's praises loudly enough. You know, we've spent a lot of time on pods this season singing the praises of Ollie Watkins, and rightly so. He massively deserves them. He's had a fantastic season. He's got 29 attacking returns. Cole Palmer now has more than him. And I just think that Cole Palmer, you're right in what you say. He's not a differential anymore. I bought him for 5 million, so I got him a little bit after you did. A bit of frustrating. I could have saved myself 0.1 had I known what he was about to do. But yeah, I must admit, I watched that Chelsea game with treble Chelsea, because I obviously had the goalie and I had Gusto as well. And then I had Palmer. I wish I'd captained Palmer, but I can't help but feel quite pleased to get the performance that we did from Chelsea. Now, Everton absolutely collapsed. I think if you've got Cole Palmer, you have to play him next week, don't you? Even though it's a single game week and it's a difficult one at Arsenal, I just couldn't begin to imagine leaving him on the bench right now.
Look, I mean, it's a difficult one. It is away to Arsenal, and all the good things we said about Arsenal and their defence. I don't see I'll be benching him. And it's not a comfortable one. But look, you know, it's difficult because I can't see playing him over a doubler like an Eze or a Salah or a Saka or another Arsenal mid. There's so many other options in attack that you just feel away to Arsenal. If there's one fixture or maybe two that you can maybe bench him, is basically away to Man City and away to Arsenal. So I think there is an opportunity. Can you be hurt? Can he punish you? Absolutely. But you have to play the fixtures. It's the same Watkins discussion we had earlier. You have to go for it. The maximum he can do is maybe, you know, they score a goal or two and he gets a 10-pointer. He's not going to get 26. So I think it's worth going against him if you can. But again, same argument as Haaland. If you're in a position where you need to navigate through this period, you don't have a wild card to dead end your team to, then I think it's also absolutely fine to play him.
I think on the other side of the pitch, and maybe the team that we're going to talk about more a little bit, because obviously they do double in game week 34 with Everton. It was more about the problems that they had. So obviously Branthwaite has been a really popular pick for FPL managers because one, he's super cheap and he was enabling that defence to work and enabling us to have the Salahs, the Haalands, the KDBs, the Suns, the Sakas, all of those guys that we all want to have in our teams. He goes off injured in this one. Sean Dyche said he thinks it's minor, but we're going to have to wait and see how minor that is and whether he's going to be available to play 2 games in a week, because that's the other thing now. Of course, it's a quick turnaround at the weekend and then obviously the midweek fixture against Liverpool. Coleman has got an issue, so that's another issue for them defensively. He's got a groin issue. And then Patterson obviously also picked up an injury that seems a little bit more serious. That seems to be a hamstring problem from what Dyche was saying. This Everton defence suddenly seems to have collapsed, and they've actually been all right recently. You know, the Pickford, I've got him as my second goalkeeper alongside Petrovic, and I did that because he had the double coming up, and you know, he still has the double coming up and obviously has a nice fixture in 37 when I'm planning to play my bench boost. But I'm looking at those defensive injuries that Everton have sustained and thinking, I'm not so sure I'm loving the Pickford pick for this week anymore.
Yeah, I think the Chelsea game is a little bit of game state as well. The first couple of goals were worldies or are really well architected goals by Chelsea. So when you're 2-0 down in the first 20 minutes, it's a whole different ball game to what your tactics are, how you need to chase the game. I think Sean Dyche still has a couple of 1-0s in him between now and end of the season. And we've seen that in the past. So I think what we need to see is almost take the injuries as where are we now. So if Branthwaite is fit, I would still think that Pickford is a fine pick. I mean, home to Nottingham Forest, home to Liverpool, there's a few saves there. There's maybe a clean sheet. So it's not bad. I think people will need to consider a keeper, let's say, on free hit. And I think it's between him or a Henderson as the two standouts, unless you go for an Alisson or a Raya. So I think he's still fine. And I think Everton are still fine. It's one of those games. We don't need to sort of ring alarm bells because of this. It's a lot to do with game state, I think.
Yeah, right. Let's rattle through, because we are quickly running out of time. A quick conversation on Wolves, because they are going to be a team that a lot of managers want to target heading into the double next week. As an 8-0 owner, I was not that happy with the shenanigans that we think he's going to be available, until at the end of the game we heard from O'Neill when he was talking about how he thought he was going to be available. Then there was a little bit of a setback with his fitness test, so he was decided not to risk him. That's kind of made me feel a little bit better, actually, right, that moment, because then I was like, okay, well, if it was a minor setback, he's now had the rest at the weekend. Hopefully that means that by next weekend and for the midweek fixtures, Ait Nouri will be available. I am not necessarily expecting the same level of attacking threat from Ait Nouri when he comes back, however, and I think we should all be mindful of that, because obviously we've seen Cunha return and do incredibly well at the weekend and put himself firmly on the radar of everybody ahead of game week 34. Two goals in his first start for 2 months. So, you know, did do really well. But we're also seeing Hwang coming back. All of this stuff will have an impact on where people play, particularly if you're a Sarabia owner. We might see him getting some rotated minutes over the double, which is maybe bad timing if you are invested in him. But Wolves still feel like a team that you want to invest in. I think Ait Nouri is going to be a decent investment for the double. And if you've got a space in your forward line, Cunha feels like the real deal as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So not much to add. I would just say that Hwang is back as well. So with Hwang, Sarabia and Cunha, you won't, as you mentioned, won't see Ait Nouri playing up top or left forward as much, but or right forward for that matter. But yeah, look, still a good pick. I think home to Bournemouth is still the money game in that double. Home to Arsenal, less so. So you could still get good points out of him. So Cunha I like, and Sarabia is still okay, and Ait Nouri is still a good pick.
Mm. And Bournemouth, who also have a double, we had obviously goal for Solanke, goal for Kluivert, who I think is a really nice differential option in the midfield. If you are, I don't want to spend too much time talking about Manchester United because they don't double, and because I know you don't want me to bring that up either.
Yes,
but,
please.
But if you've got Garnacho, maybe actually a sideways move across to somebody like, you know, like a midfield option in Eze, or you've got to have a little bit more money to go to him, but you could go across to somebody like a Kluivert for the Bournemouth double. Yes. That doesn't mean you can't go back to Garnacho later for the Manchester United double by the time we hit 37, but there are options, I think, if Garnacho is your fifth midfielder. If your fifth midfielder is Cole Palmer or Anthony Gordon, I think the midfield becomes much more difficult. But if it's Garnacho, I think you could move things around there.
Yeah, I mean, so a couple of things on that. So I think you might need Garnacho back because they have a similar situation to Newcastle where they have good fixtures and then a double.
Yeah.
But I think in isolation, I do agree. The only problem is Bournemouth are now actually getting a lot of injuries up top. So Tavernier is injured. Kluivert actually came off with a minor injury as well. We don't know where that is going. Semenyo is injured. So suddenly, you know, they don't have the wide forwards that they had available. And Sinisterra went off injured as well. So there is a problem there. And it affects not only the wide forwards, but also Solanke. Because when Ünal came in, Ünal is basically number nine. And so Solanke had to play behind him. So that also affects his attacking output. So obviously Solanke is still a good pick, and I would still pick him on a free hit or not. You know, he's on pens, looks as attacking as he does normally. So I think he's the good pick. But wide forwards, just be a little bit more careful. And I wouldn't touch the defense unless you're on free hit if you're on a free hit. So unless you have them from the past, like I have Neto, I'll play him anyway. But I wouldn't otherwise touch the defense because they are two tough away games at the double.
Yeah. I think I tend to agree. I think I just look at Manchester United and I think there's maybe an opportunity there this week to sell Garnacho for somebody with a massive upside. If your team is in perfect place otherwise, if you haven't got issues and injuries across the rest of your team. But I do agree with you. I do think you're going to be wanting to go back because, as you say, coming out of the double game week, Manchester United's fixtures are really nice. I just wish we knew a bit more about which Manchester United team we were going to get on a weekly basis, because if they're going to play well, you'd absolutely want to invest for 35 right the way through till the end of the season. But if we see performances like this one, where actually, I think, lucky to get what you did out of this game, maybe I'm less inclined to go all in and all heavy on Manchester United because we're just not seeing that consistency right now.
Yep, I agree with all of that. And last word from me on Sheffield United. They also have a double. And some people could be looking at Brereton, basically Brereton Diaz. He is a midfielder, plays up top. His underlying data is actually very good. His XG involvement over the last few have been above 0.5 in pretty much the last four games. I think he's a good option if people wanted to look at it. And a bonus tip for FPL Challenge, you get double points this week for promoted teams. So you'd actually get four times the points for Diaz. So definitely look out for him.
Yeah, I've put him in my challenge team already for this weekend because it's an opportunity, isn't it? Double the points because you've got, or potential for double the points anyway, because you've got two fixtures. And then whatever he does get, you are going to get double the points for because that's what the challenge is this week. So
absolutely.
For me, he was a bit of a no-brainer in the challenge team. I'm going to find it a little bit more difficult to bring him into my actual main team because I don't think I'm going to want to keep him beyond this double game week. It would be a one-week transfer. And at this point in the season with five game weeks to go, I need to make sure that my transfers aren't just one-week punts. They need to be working for me long-term because I don't have a wild card left and that bench boost is looming in the back of my head for game week 37. So I've got to make sure that I've got enough transfers to get to that. So sadly, that means missing out, but that's why I like challenge. It gives me the opportunity to get these puck guys in my other team.
If you don't have five Sheffield United picks this week in the challenge, you're doing it wrong. But anyway, awesome. Okay. Thanks for the great discussion. Just a reminder, game week 34 is the biggest double game week left this season. Not only does it have all these teams doubling, Spurs have a blank as well. So ahead of that, Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool and West Ham and Aston Villa all have European second legs to play out. And some of them will also play the FA Cup quarterfinal. So if you're free hitting this week, feel free to tinker. But if you're using your transfers, be patient. Kelly, Jules and Sam will be back on Thursday to talk through the must-haves for game week 34.
And if you haven't already done so, don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is IB3WLK.
See you next time, everyone. Good luck.
Bye, guys.